Welcome back. This is Hash Rate Up. Today is all about the climate. At Bitcoin Atlantis on Madeira, I sat down with Jeff Booth, who doesn't need any introduction, and Harald Rauter, climate expert, to talk all about the current system, how we've put ourselves in this position, and how we can get ourselves out through Bitcoin, and especially Bitcoin mining. Stay tuned. Enjoy.
All right, guys. So like I said in the introduction, I'm here with Jeff Booth, Harald Rauter. We are at block height 832661. Hash rate on the 30-day is at 570 exahashes before the halving. And hash price now, after the nice price increase at 106, is going to be very interesting to see how much hash rate can really keep up. Guys, thank you very much for making the time, for making this happen. This is a bit of a different setup than what I usually have at home, with like one webcam pointed at me and all the control in my two hands. So yeah, again, thank you very much for the time and welcome.
No problem.
Thanks for having us.
How has the conference been going so far? We've only done 2 hours. Jeff, you helped plan this a little bit as well. How much went into planning and how much has gone to plan so far?
Lots went into planning. We'll see how things go to plan at the conference. But I would say the people that are here, this seems just like an incredibly high signal event. Great people.
You got everybody.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's just, and not just... Not, I'm not just talking about the speakers, I'm talking about the people in participation. It's just incredible people here.
How are you, Harald?
Not much more to add. It's an incredible island, super welcoming people, nice weather, and it seems like everybody is really in a good mood to exchange, to mingle, and to share as much signal as possible.
100%. Yeah, definitely keeps up with Cape Town as well. That's always my baseline, right? Coming from there, it's a city of beauty, so definitely. And driving here is a lot of fun. There's not one straight road. Guys, today we're going to speak about what Harald is working on, how we fix the system from inside or outside the system. We're going to try to bring it back to mining somewhere. That's going to be my job. But maybe, Harald, maybe you can give people a brief introduction. Yeah. I know you've been on What Bitcoin Did. That was a while ago, right?
That's a while ago, yeah.
Give people a bit of color to your person and what you're working on.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. So I'm a biochemist by training, actually, but I've not been working in that field for quite a while. I've been working for the past 10 years, mostly in the venture capital space, specifically on scouting, identifying early stage ventures that help us to decarbonize our economy from a high carbon intensive economy, essentially fossil fuel based, to a carbon extensive economy. And so on this journey, I have sort of had the opportunity to see what is real in this conversation and what is a scam. And I think what we can agree on, or what I would argue to, that we hopefully can agree on, is that climate change is real, global warming is real, and that it is mostly and predominantly a result of an externality of human flourishing. And I think that's important. Humans need to flourish. We should flourish, and we produce externalities along the way. I think how we have approached, and we need to do something about it, if we want to keep on flourishing and want to have a life on this planet. What is a scam, in my opinion, is how we as a world community have come together to approach this. And I think the tactical approach is by top-down policy making, behavioral constraints, and essentially almost pushing the world into a kind of degrowth prospect, which I think has not only not served us well on the climate front, because it has been utterly inefficient and ineffective, but it also jeopardizes the human right to flourish on this planet. Yeah. So in 2017, I discovered Bitcoin, and of course, I kept it very much under the radar for a very long time, given the hostile stance of this climate community towards the Bitcoin community. But I started to sort of play with the ideas of how does Bitcoin fit in all of this and its various dimensions and various qualities. And to make a long story short, I'm now at the point where I'm thinking that we have substantial evidence that Bitcoin is, in fact, the X factor, the enabling catalyzer to if done well, serves both purposes, that it serves the planet and it serves human flourishing. And so currently I'm working on an investment thesis that sort of puts Bitcoin in the center and sort of caters upside to let's say climate sensitive or climate conscious capital on the one hand, but also builds a rail towards the Bitcoin ventures that actually produce this positive effect, both for human flourishing as well as for the planet. And I think while there is still a huge gap to cover, there's a lot of misunderstanding vis-a-vis these two spaces, but I think it's incredibly important to build this bridge so that we can actually, you know, unlock a lot of capital that is available and put it to work where it actually produces positive results.
I think some of the stuff you mentioned has a lot to do with energy, and it's going to be very easy for me to get to mining. What I would like to understand from you, Jeff, is, again, and I think you've explained this multiple times, maybe we'll tackle it from a different angle. Why have we arrived at a point where growth means placing 56 tons of fast fashion items in a desert somewhere? Why is that growth to the current system? And I mean, why isn't it, obviously?
Yeah, and I'm going to qualify this first. Any of these issues that are within the system, climate change is one of them, politics is another, all of these issues cannot be solved within and people get polarized on they believe it or they don't believe it. And the truth is we don't know, right? There is some evidence, then there's some evidence against, and we don't know. And I might lean one side, but it doesn't much matter. The truth is bigger than that, right? And by polarizing an audience on one side or another, you actually make the whole system stronger because people are yelling at each other and they can't even listen to what's actually really happening. So to answer your question, the free market is deflationary. Marginal cost of production falls, if prices fall, the marginal cost of production, society gets richer by our ideas solving problems. That is the natural state. That means every year society should be getting richer and working less. Not just part of society, the entire global population. That is a natural course. We are inhibiting the natural course through manipulated money. And this paradox should be so easy to see. Like, if just ask yourself, would you use Google if all of a sudden Google charged $2 a click? And you wouldn't, right? You would use something else that gave you more value. So everything in your life, you're looking to create more value, and entrepreneurs are trying to solve problems to create that. And prices are going up. How is that possible, right? If we're the choosers of more value, that could only happen if we chose to get less value all the time. Or if something else was stopping that value from coming to us. And that's what's happening. We're stopping that value from coming to us. Now you add technology to that. And so if prices fall to the marginal cost of production and you have exponentially increasing productivity through technology, then that means prices should be falling exponentially. And we should all be getting richer exponentially all over the planet. And if you connect to that, then when people talk about growth and where we are, then growth should be growth should equal faster deflation.
Yep.
Right? That's where we are. And it is the manipulation of that that touches everything we're talking about, not just what side of the climate change and all the fight, because you have to keep people stuck inside a system, you have to divide them. Because then they will make the system stronger because they will all both believe inside that system and they'll drive that system stronger. And you could actually really simply, it didn't connect for a lot of people when I used to say it because they hadn't gone through the work to understand the system they're living in is creating all the negative externalities. And a new system that allowed the productivity to flow to us naturally would solve all of the problems. But the derivative of that is you could just say inflation equals climate change. Mm-hmm. It's that 100%. Simple.
Yeah.
It's that simple because it's an unnatural. You have to grow. It's essentially saying, I'm going to grow forever by making up more pieces of paper of units to make everything else scarce. And inside, every single person on the planet has to work harder and harder. They need two cars, they need two jobs to be able to pay two jobs. And they all think, and they're trying to get ahead of each other while everything's getting more scarce. Mm. And they're dividing everything. And that system, when you say the inside the system, then I can totally understand people who don't believe in climate change. Because whether it's true or not true, because the system's lying to them about everything else, and the system must create more lies to be able to keep control. So then people start to say, well, if you're lying about that, right? If you're lying, what else are you lying about? Then what else are you lying about? And that's where societies are ripping apart. And people are taking, they're so sure that they're right within that system, they can't see the bigger picture. Right. So that's what's happening.
What you said is, I 100% concur. If you read anything in mainstream media on Bitcoin, you realize they don't know what the hell they're talking about. And then you wonder, hey, what else don't they read that I have no idea about myself? Like, what else are they, you know, what are they, what don't they know? And they're reporting on mainstream.
I can't read anything in mainstream media anymore. Nothing. So, because that's exactly what it is. When you realize, when you've gone down so far into the rabbit hole and you realize what I just said is true, right? Not might be true. Technology is deflation, where prices follow the marginal cost of production, that it creates the free market is deflation. And then people nod their heads and go straight back to the other system and believe it. You're just going, you want to pull your hair out. Right? Yeah. I can't listen to any of it anymore.
Well, I don't think it's sort of all mismanaged or whatever by some central party or whatever. I think it's all still a downstream effect of misaligned incentives that the system creates.
100%.
And it just aligns people on the complete wrong track, right? So the biggest thing that I see, and then we come back to the climate thing, is this pure misallocation of resources that are wasted on things that you think I would never need. Like from the Bitcoin angle, having switched already, being on the like little lifeboat that we're all on, looking at the board sinking, you're like, why are you going to H&M every 2 weeks buying t-shirts that will last you 6 months at most, and then you chuck them away? You know, the resources that go into that. And then I ask myself, is there any way to quantify this and to say, like, Put all these industries in one basket: fast fashion, travel industry, you name it. All the stuff that the fiat system creates in the name of growth. Is there any way to measure the impact that has, or not really? Or it's so.
I mean, there are a lot of variables in this question, right? And I think it's really hard to quantify because you're missing the counterfactual.
Exactly.
This is, and I think you can hypothesize around what Jeff just said. How would we behave on a Bitcoin standard? And then you redefine what does growth actually means. Growth means productivity, means translation into prosperity, human prosperity. But, you know, how do you put that into numbers? None of the frameworks that we use or currently use or have used apply to this future. So, and that's sort of the irony that I think a lot of people get hung up on, that I love this conversation, how much workforce does Bitcoin produce? You know, how much productivity in terms of labor does it add? Well, I hope it eliminates labor.
Totally.
Yeah. And so, you know, how do we translate that in a language of the current system? And I think there are two motives at play here. What I can say first is, why is everybody so hung up on the CPI? Because it is, retail consumption is a massive part of GDP. So you want to make sure that people just consume within this paradigm. Yeah. So you can now hypothesize and say, well, even if we keep everything else equal, take yourself in living on a Bitcoin standard or on a Bitcoin ethics, you evaluate very clearly where you put your capital in and what adds more value to you than sort of the sats that you need to sacrifice for it. Yeah. And then, of course, you will have, you know, then your last 10 sats will mean less to you than your first 10 sats. Yeah. So there will continue to be consumption. There will continue to be spending, hopefully, but it will be done in a more productive and efficient way. Now you can hypothesize how many efficiency will emissions will that produce. I think it's negligible. So, and I think part of why, and then we come to, you know, like how do we move from where we are to this, I think, very desirable future, and how many people have something against that future? Well, it's all those who profit from the system as it is. And as you rightfully said, I think we have unleashed a dynamic in terms of money printing, an irreversible dynamic that just will continue to press and press and press more money. But it will add a lot of overheads where a lot of people will profit from. And all of those people will fight this future in a very egoistic way. And they do so completely ignoring that they're jeopardizing maybe their children's future or their children's well-being. Yeah, I don't want to even make it that dramatic that civilization will end.
It is that dramatic. It is that dramatic. That's the question you took. Measurement is a function of the system, right? The new system, implied in what I was saying, if the measurement is productivity growth and that's faster deflation, the new system means faster deflation. And what you can see in Bitcoin is people that are measuring their life by the existing system are getting more angry. They're more mad at more people. Why are they more angry? Because their money is being debased and the world's creating more and more problems. They're measuring from the debasing system. People that are measuring in Bitcoin, I'm not saying taking Bitcoin price into their fiat dollars and then measuring. I'm talking about actually measuring from Bitcoin. What are they saying? They're saying
prices
coming down every year. They're saying the prices, they're experiencing the free market. They're experiencing what we're experiencing at this conference, that love is all around us. Abundance is all around us. Every year, everything I could buy gets cheaper. Right, and they're already living in the future, and a lot of them look over at the people that are living in the past, and remember, Bitcoin doesn't care what I think about it. It doesn't care if you print more money to make your life worse. Right, it just responds. It's repricing. It's imposing that on the world, and it doesn't matter what you think about it. It doesn't matter if people yell at it. It doesn't matter what comes after it. It gets stronger and more decentralized, more secure, more decentralized every year as it's imposing the real reality, physics reality, on us. And you could argue with reality if you want. You could get mad at reality if you want. And you could live in a bubble in your reality that has all these externalities. But eventually you're going to have to face it. And the beautiful thing about this is happening. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that's going to slow it down. If it's climate change you care about, if it's anything, if it's politics you care about, if it's all of these symptoms from the existing system that's really mismeasuring what's happening in the world, because if money is just information connecting us, and you have misinformation in money, it would be natural it looks like that, right? If you're measuring from the new system that doesn't have misinformation in money, you see it perfectly clear. And that is happening no matter what. Well, so the only question is, how fast do people join you?
Right.
Right. And how fast do they see a different future?
Yes.
And how fast does the world change from that different future? But regardless, that's where we're going. And you imagine what this means. Because this discovery is so hard to grasp because humans have never seen it before, they're looking at this discovery through all of the previous baggage. It means no history book we've ever seen has this in it. And so they're looking at constructs from like we want, we would normally do, to try to measure something that's totally new and imposing this. And they're, and even when people start to understand Bitcoin, they most of the time they carry their baggage into Bitcoin, and they can't see the, how it operates completely different from everything else. And as they kind of remove their baggage and realize what this means, they go deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole, and you see how it impacts everything else.
Have we ever seen this before? I mean, we all know Bitcoin is better than gold, but have we ever seen this in past societies before, where hard money has created abundance and flourishing?
So four times, but here's what I realized with my thesis, and I probably didn't even realize it in the book. I realized it after this when I. When I looked through the lens of the long arc of history, I realized that the free market was always deflationary. It was just deflationary at a slower rate because we hadn't invented things to be. We live on top of this, right? All of who came before us creates faster and faster deflation, and what that would mean is, 2,000 years ago, 5,000 years, it went slower.
Mm-hmm.
And that means if you could steal a tiny little bit of productivity from the entire population, right, then you could enrich yourself and slowly, and they wouldn't notice, right? Because if the natural market is deflationary and you could skim off a little bit top, because most people measure inflation from zero,
yeah,
but they shouldn't be measuring from zero. They should be measuring from the rate of deflation. So if you could skim a tiny bit, you skim from everybody on the planet, or everybody in Rome, or and you do that for a long time, and then you get to this thing that it breaks, and people start to notice, and because inflation has to go up higher, and then people start to, what's going on, and then you have to create an enemy within your state or country to be able to convince those people it's those other people. And then you have to create an enemy outside of your borders to get your people to go to war, because those people are going to take your rights.
Yeah.
And then you reset it all again after if you win the war, and it starts again.
I mean,
that's history, and that's our entire life history, and largely because when you go to gold could be centralized. So you had these pockets of windows that looked like they worked for a while, and you had human flourishing under the most free markets. But then because of that centralization, you could trust that if you could have that power of centralization, humans would always take it, right?
Yeah.
And so they would cheat. And if gold worked to be able to create and stop that cheating, then it would have worked. We wouldn't need Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Right? And that's where this is different. It is truly decentralized and secure. And that's where people need to go deep enough to understand why this is a first and ever discovery, and why that would be so confusing if society, no one has ever seen it before. You have to rethink, instead of thinking and dragging what it looks like from your pre-existing baggage, you have to impose what this means and work from the future backwards.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's a totally different paradigm. But once you do that, all of the next steps, I'm surprised that people are surprised, because I can see all of the next steps perfectly.
Yeah. It's kind of ironic that because of technology, we seem to have, we've never had this amount of deflationary pressure of the system because of the technology that we have. I mean, just AI is the next sort of thing. I think you mentioned it in your book as well, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, that level of technological advancements has produced Bitcoin as sort of this antithesis to that. So it comes at the right time. While deflation or heavy deflation is caused by technology, it can also, the problem that it creates in combination with the inflationary system that we're living in largely. So Bitcoin comes at the exact right time. So what I would like to understand your thoughts around is
how do we accelerate it? How do we get, because there is genuine efforts to make the world a better place, right? There's a large industry dedicated to exactly that question. How do we get them there? How does your thesis help them see? Because right now, and I know we spoke about this a bit before, and there are a lot of incentives, there's a lot of shoulder padding, a lot of you doing a good job saving the planet for people who really aren't, because they don't see the second order effects.
Yeah, and I went personally through the entire journey. I started in the climate space in 2016. I had to explain what climate change is. Then 17, 18, Greater Thunberg came around. Suddenly it became a vote topic. Suddenly everybody was interested in. Then the shoulder padding started. And I think where I just want to clarify is that all of those people have started from the right intentions. They do that because they want to make the world a better place. But as you said, rightfully, power corrupts. And if you give those people resources and power, create sort of power monopolies, power monopolies will monopolize power, and they will continue to do so. And then, you know, we have the whole ball game within the system, for which, or as a derivative of what the system is designed for. And I think what makes Bitcoin so special is that it just shows one thing. If you repress people too much, they will find a way to create something that arbitrages that and gives them an exit out. Now you can do this. You cannot suppress it. And I think this is why totalitarian regimes are horrible, but there's always the spark of hope because people want to live and people need to live. I think the question is, how do we make this constructive, right? And why Bitcoin and this and climate are in a way the natural fit, because if you wanna decarbonize the economy, you need to look at where are most of the emissions, and that's essentially the energy sector. Yeah, so you cover about 75% through primary energy or a derivative of primary energy. And obviously, as we now know, in terms of pioneering renewable energy, scaling of renewable energy, balancing renewable energy heavy power infrastructures, monetizing stranded energy is an incredibly, well, Bitcoin is an incredibly powerful fit. And I think one of the myths that have been cultivated and successfully cultivated is that if we own within the legacy system, if we only use less energy, then everything will be fine. Well, nothing will be fine. We will be incredibly poor because there's no such thing as energy poor prosperity. Yeah. So I think that's a very dangerous thesis. And a lot of the infrastructures and rails and narratives is geared towards how can we use less energy. But the truth is, if we look at the carbon balance between, you know, how do we need to decarbonize in terms of getting emitting less CO2 or getting the CO2 that is already in the air out of the air, we will need, I would be interested to hear your guess, but I would probably say 100 times more energy. Yeah?
Yeah.
10 to 100 times more energy. And this is within sort of a consideration where the entire AI boom and all the business value that is generated on top of it is not even included. Yeah. And I think this is not anymore a Bitcoin specific conversation. Now we have another enemy with artificial intelligence, and there will be others that use even more energy. Yeah. So I think the question is now, how can we reverse this whole thing? How can we reject the whole thesis of we need less energy, we need more energy? How can we incentivize the build outs, and how can we do so economically so that it makes sense? And I think one of the powerful combinations, when we talk about Bitcoin, we need to see two dimensions at least. We need to see the mechanism of proof of work consuming electricity to keep the network safe and alive, But secondly, there's also an immutable economics around it. And what people want to build reliable business and successful business is a meter that works now, that works in the future, and that works in the far future. And this is the promise of Bitcoin. And I think when we think about the repression and the climate repression, and I call it that way, that is happening and imposed on people, people have now an instrument where they can permissionless opt in and create value for themselves. And by design, this thing is creating a net positive outcome for the environment as well. And this is why I'm 100% with you. It's not an either or conversation. I don't impose on you what you need to think. I applaud you if you do something within the network. Be productive in the network. And if you only hodl, you're already giving this thing more value because you make more supply illiquid. If you're mining, if you're thriving to look for the cheapest sources of energy. These are natural tendencies that will continue. We don't even know what the next generation of revenue stack for mining is going to be because the hash rate is going to be so high that not even methane combustion will cut it anymore. But this is a natural tendency, and this is what we can rely on because nobody can tamper the system.
There is a piece of baggage into, because people say on the block rewards, you can't do it later on. You know why they think that? Because they're pricing in fiat. The block rewards, when you realize that all prices are falling in the marginal cost of production, and you realize the chase to essentially the new peer-to-peer internet is bounded by energy and creating energy abundance at the same time.
Yeah.
And the abundance that flows to human beings in the form of prices falling lower and lower and lower, those block rewards, even out 80 years from now,
yeah,
are lots. And there will still be a market competing to you don't have to create more, you don't have to create more fees to be able to create that incentive when you measure in Bitcoin. You only think you do when you measure in fiat.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those examples that, because people can't see what this actually means, because they're looking from this lens out instead of this lens back.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was going to say that the AI piece, I feel like supercharges the good that Bitcoin mining will do in the world, because it pushes Bitcoin mining, it's competition in places where you can do both. And the margins with AI are much greater. Right, so per kilowatt hour, it makes a lot more sense. So it pushes mining further out of the fringe. Now we're looking at Ethiopia, super crowded trade. And Ethiopia, to your point, is a perfect example of what you just said for two reasons. First, when you are there, you will see how people will always find a way, even when the fiat system has created the most dire of circumstances. You will find people that find the most innovative business models to survive. Right? That's number one. And number two is they have created energy abundance through misallocation of capital, electricity abundance, I should say. Largest hydro dam in Africa. People have heard me speak about this. They're using 15% of it, right? And Bitcoin mining goes exactly there and says, thank you very much for your misallocation of capital. You created electricity abundance for us. Now we're going to come and soak it all up.
Listen to this. You'll love this. In Malawi, who was just there. They had their currency revalued again by about 50%.
The kwacha, right?
Kwacha was there, and the IMF imposed things like this: you have to build an energy, you have to build solar charging stations for EVs in Malawi. In Malawi, yeah. There isn't an EV in sight in Malawi. The average wage is $2 a day,
and it gets more ridiculous.
Yeah. And the IMF is making them do this to be able to save the planet. So what's happening? So a whole bunch of Bitcoin miners are going in and creating free energy on these things that have been misallocated to capital, yeah, just exactly like you said, and it's moving the new system faster. So I'm hopeful because the incentives of this. You said something interesting, and I totally agree. Did Bitcoin come at the right time? If you look at how human progress emerges, it's always this. It's we solve problems, right? And where there's problems, there's always insight to solve that problem. There's so many people and we that go and race and solve that problem. And then we solve that problem, and we go on to the next problem, and we go on to the next problem. And all of that solving problems is what I'm talking about in deflation.
Right? Yeah.
That's what it looks like. So if you don't believe we can solve problems, right, then you live in a control structure where others pretend to solve them for you, and it'll look a lot like it does.
Yeah. No, again, I mean, I want to get into this energy abundance piece because, again, coming from that sort of African angle, founding my company around the premise of bringing more hash rate to Africa, development aid has, I don't think, created
terrible.
Much more misallocation than in Africa, where
it held progress back.
Yeah, you can't find 100% more on it. Like, Ethiopia could be one of the richest nations in the world if they took this seriously, because they've got 90% hydro dams or 90% hydroelectricity in their grid mix. Energy is super cheap, right? And they could again be one of the most prospering nations in the world.
This is really important to be, because if you're again inside this, there's a lot of people that think, okay, why isn't in Africa doing this? And we need to give them more aid, and it's just a natural thing out of the system. What it actually really is today we have, and I hate saying this, so this is one of the hard things for me to unpack. It was hard for me to unpack. Today we have slavery.
Oh yeah.
We just don't move the slaves to us. We keep them there, and we revalue their currencies so we can extract their raw materials, and then we tell ourselves they can't have food. So we have slavery today. It's just through a financial system that keeps them there. So no wonder they get on boats to try to get to the country that's stealing from them.
Yeah.
Right. And so when you realize how horrific that is, and there are so many people unlocked from being able to provide their minds to a network that is in service to us, you can't go back. But it's connected to this thing. And so all of those people, there's like you said, that aid, that IMF, it imposes this hardship to keep them there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's, you know, again, I use it as a very good example. Ethiopia has two options, right? To bring electricity to people, you need transmission and distribution. That costs a lot of money. In Africa in general, if you look at the continent, transmission and distribution is not very well built out. And I'm very certain that the future is decentralized energy pockets and people moving to them wherever there is generation capacity, right? So Ethiopia has two options. Either they can accept the IMF money, the development aid money, to say, hey, we need to build out these grids to bring power to people to stop deforestation. Okay, cool. Then you need to make your people even more poor so that you can pay back the loans that you'll never pay back anyway, right? Or they can say, hey, let's invite everybody that wants to come, take the perceived risk, take a foot into the water and like start mining here, produce revenue from the energy resources that we have and use that money coming in to build out that infrastructure, right? And I think there's many, many more examples like this. You know, we all know Gridless very well. They do a great job of this.
Yeah.
It's all private. There's nobody meddling in there, you know? And there's a lot of hydro dams, for instance, that cannot be, with the current sort of classic methods, cannot be financed, because nobody's going to finance a 5-megawatt hydro dam when 4 megawatts of it are stranded, right? And then saying, hey, we got these Bitcoin miners, they're going to send you out the door, because to them it's not a bankable customer, right? All the Bitcoin miners say, thank you very much, that's cheap power, let's do it, you know? And here's one more thing that I want to say is, to some extent, The Bitcoin price has, I think, an effect on how much Bitcoin can do for the current system, because when Bitcoin was worth nothing, there were no multi-million companies that could build capex for electricity infrastructure, right? But now that Bitcoin is at 60, 70, wherever it's going to go, all of a sudden you've got a market cap. You can take on debt. You can now say, hey, I'm going to invest in electrical infrastructure and help Bitcoin mining flourish through it. Right. So there's some paradox there as well.
I like the idea of framing Bitcoin as an option on future prosperity. And essentially, this option is constantly repriced. So essentially, it's a pivot. And it's a proxy for how much do people distrust the existing system, and how much do they trust that this is actually a viable platform to build a prosperous future. And obviously, I understand why legacy institutions are scared of this thing. Scared to death. I mean, by design, it intermediates the entire existing legacy institutions. So this representative institutionalism in which we live in, which was super comfortable for quite a while, is essentially already discounted fully.
Yeah.
A lot of unproductive stuff that is essentially done peer-to-peer. And I think what is different about Bitcoin in the context of how connected the world has become, information just flows incredibly fast. So information velocity is enormous. That's why the comparison to the gold ETFs in 2004 is completely ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is not gold. It is not one single thing. It's a multitude of things, and everybody can come in through their individual angle and can generate value for him or herself and bridge this to their communities back. We have spies in all institutions. We have sleeper cells in all institutions. And I would argue this is exactly what he should say. This is because you will never, as an outsider, get the social capital, the relationships, the intimacy with these groups that you would never have access to, as compared to a sleeper cell who is orange-pilled within those institutions and you can multiply the message.
Yeah.
And then you have one standard that coordinates globally. I mean, that's the most incredible idea that you can possibly think of. So it's ridiculous to think that you stop this anyways, but I understand why you would try to. And so I think this is a lot of I love the diversity within this group, and everybody comes in through their
angle.
Individual angle. And I think once you leave the baggage behind and in front of the door, it becomes a huge asset to the community. Now, and exactly, I'm not arguing anyone you should now convert to a climate change believer. Because you are in this space, you are producing that positive outcome.
Whether you want to or not.
You are my friend. Yeah. I support you. And in an inelastic systems, you will generate value for everybody.
And the output of what you create creates value for everybody else.
Correct.
The people who drive the change often don't care about money because they've got a ton of it and they've been patted on the back by the existing system enough. So how do we get those guys? Because I'm here because number go up, right? Back in the day, number went up, found the system, understood energy. Okay, shit, now I'm here talking to, you know, two great people about deep shit on Bitcoin mining and the existing system. It's a fantastic ride. Mm. But the question is, how do we accelerate this? How do we get people that don't really care about the money, that are capital allocators, to see this and to stop?
So in time, they will. How did Galileo get people to realize that the sun didn't rotate around the earth, right?
Yeah.
It was a truth. And how did that happen? He took a telescope and looked outside the system that everybody else was measuring. And he had the only telescope that looked outside the system. And now there was a new truth that people had to reconcile with. And they fought it. And they fought him, put him in jail. And they fought. But the new truth outside of the system was the truth. And then it imposed, people all of a sudden saw it. What this is, what you're talking about, is you have a system that can't solve any of the problems. It makes everything worse. And most people think there is a solve from within that system. And they, in tune, take all of their energy and they make all the problems worse. And they fight with each other within that system. And it gains strength by dividing people within that on every different issue. And so when will those people see? Eventually. Because this is the truth, and as more people just, okay, they hit they start to see it, and then they start to investigate, and they start to remove their baggage, and once they find out all of the things they used to believe in are actually a lie, they start to go deeper down the rabbit hole. But that's hard to, because why I said one of the hard ones for me was the exploitation. If you have a system that has to systematically exploit people, then as a derivative, if I'm in the winning country,
you're an exploiter.
I'm an exploiter. That was really hard to believe, that all of my hard work had a cost on somebody in Africa. Had a direct cost, that because I didn't want to believe that. It's me, right? It's all me. But if I was born somewhere else, I didn't have this opportunity, because I would have been the ones exploited from. And so when you actually realize that, you have two choices. It can't be true. I'm going to fight it, right? I'm going to ignore it, put my head in the sand, or I'm going to investigate it and do something about it. And that's a hard thing to go through. And I understand why people, hit this point, and it's just too much for them to deal with. So they had to go back to the safety of their old system and say, oh, those guys are crazy. I understand it. But eventually it won't matter, because this is the reality and it's going to impose it. So it's just...
I'm a good example for this. I'll tell you why, right? Because when I started out with this, like 2016, 17, I worked for a company who provided electricity to rural villages in Mali, right? We built mini grids, solar, and everything else. And so the whole thesis was, hey, let's do this without government aid, because government aid bad, right? We arrived, there were no grids. Right, we ended up taking on some subsidy program, development aid, whatever, to be able to move forward. Right, so that's point number one. You can't really get there without it anymore. Right, and as soon as I realized, hey, my salary is directly dependent on the money printer, because without it, there is no demand for what I'm doing. I was like, fuck, I can't do this anymore. You know, and then the second thing is, what the job that we try to do. It's almost like in a place like Mali, the system that we've had for the last 50 years has created a situation where without it, you can't thrive anymore. Or it's very hard to, because people don't even have the money to afford like a 90 US dollar electricity connection. Now, all of a sudden, our company has to become a microfinance institution and goes bankrupt because nobody pays back their loans, right? So you realize this, you're like, hey, what I'm doing here, you know, energy might be the basis for everything else, but as long as it's coupled to
fiat, I'm making it worse.
There's no way of solving.
Yeah.
And this is me finding, this is what you just said, everybody finds it in their own time. Everybody gets the price that they deserve, we often say, right? But it's just a different way of saying, hey, everybody will come to it when the time is right, or when it aligns, you know what I mean? And for me, that was earlier. For some people, that would be later. But again, just seeing how incapable, or how unable we were to make, like, it was good intentions. Again, all coming from the climate, all we need to say, all solar energy, blah, 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 right? We could not do business there, because the conditions were just not friendly enough to do anything about it. And it happens on a large scale. Anybody that ever read, you know, the two pieces that I like most of Gladstein's are the IMF piece, what we just talked about, right? The coupling of certain regulatory boundaries to fiat money. And then the France FA piece that keeps 15 countries in poverty through monetary slavery at the end of the day, right? And people are seeing this. If you speak to people on the ground, they're seeing this. They don't like the French. It's not a surprise to see a French embassy burn and the whole of West Africa going with Russia instead, because they've been screwed over so many times, you know.
It's monetary colonialism.
And again, that's exactly. And technology makes them see it. There's nobody without a smartphone. Nobody without information.
So let's use EVs. A whole bunch of climate people say we have to go to EVs really fast. 72% of all cobalt is mined in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yeah.
They make $2.50 a day to do that, living in absolute horrendous conditions. If they made more, this would fail. So every time they start to make more, their currency is revalued down.
Yeah.
Because now you have them as modern day slaves.
Yeah.
That's what the system looks like. And so when we stand up and say those people should do that, and we're making it look like that with our actions. That's actually what you have to see. And that takes, how fast does that happen? It takes a humility. Mm. It takes empathy to see, and openness to, I was wrong, right?
Yeah.
I didn't see this before, and now I do. But once you get there, this is one of the things that people almost call Bitcoin a religion. Because once you get there, you will never go back. You will never go back. And so if somebody tries to short Bitcoin to make price go down and everything else, what will Bitcoiners do? They will buy it all up and take it up. Because you will never go back to the system you lived in, no matter what. And that's what kind of, if you say the journey down the rabbit hole, that's what you see. And that becomes infectious because you realize, or at least hopefully you realize, I was once one of those people thinking I was solving it, and I wasn't. Because everybody go on a discovery like this that is out truly the only thing without counterparty risk to the existing system is completely independent, creating abundant energy by its very present. It would be confusing for those in the system. And so, but I think that's what every single person goes through. And then once you're there, or once some people are there, they believe everyone else should just know it like that. Even though...
Yeah, I'm being impatient.
Yeah, even though 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 2 weeks ago, you didn't know all the answers.
Mm.
Now you do, and you start, what are you doing? When they're just where you were 2 years ago.
Yeah,
and it disregards the human needs because the journey is painful in two ways. Because first there is an acknowledgement that needs to happen. How much of a frog you are in the boiling water. And then there is the scary part that you have not yet a mental, spiritual, psychological toolkit framework that allows you to navigate the void that you're looking at. And I think this is incredibly tough because this system is designed to slowly nudge you into your place. It starts with your parents. It goes on with school. It goes with quota and studies. It goes there, and suddenly you think you have chosen this place that you find yourself in, like you find yourself in the place where you accept Gates had money to do something, and you think you're doing good, and you need to. And you have all of these light bulbs.
You're being told that.
Absolutely.
It was my absolute goal. Sorry, I'll interrupt you. It's my absolute goal after my studies to do something with Africa Energy and GIZ, KfW, with the first addresses.
Yeah, sure.
And they're the worst enemy of what I'm trying to achieve.
Yeah. It's the gateway drug. Yeah. That affirms you.
And then that group says, oh, yeah, you're doing such good work. Your parents, oh, you're saving the world. And you don't want to believe you're not.
Mm.
That's really hard. It's really hard. That's why I totally empathize with people's journey. I do agree. It's mostly incentives into this. I'm fond of saying there is no they, it's we.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
It's all we.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There is no they. They are only they because of the power you give them by yelling at them and creating more power for them. Right. And we, it's all we. Right. And the incentives of this create an interconnectedness on something that is so powerful for humanity. It's just staggering.
And if I just may add, and I think like to look at it on a pain level, the pain that people, how do we get people in? It's not by lecturing. This doesn't work. And I think the final send that you achieve when you're like, I'm not orange pilling anybody. I understand if people do, and we need those as well. I think at some point you just know that everybody needs to go through their journey. And I think the journey is the pain of changing lesser than the pain that I'm experiencing in the current state. And I think that's an irreversible dynamic that we're on, which will reach an infliction point. And I hope this infliction point will be achieved peacefully, but I don't think so.
If you measure the exponential sort of adoption of Bitcoin through the market cap it has in fiat terms, right? Now the ETFs come in. How
Maybe as a last sort of question before we close out, how do the ETFs affect this? The number go up, the, you know, switching the system around. How much? Because I mean, those are the very guys that came up with the ESG stuff, right? How does them seeing Bitcoin for what it is affect what we talked about the last 45 minutes?
Yeah, I think it's, if you allow me, I would rephrase the question, because the whole ESG thing is a scam in itself created by the old system. I think what we need to break it down to is the individual incentives and motives. And people want ways out. And what everybody in this community can provide is a legacy that, if not carried as a baggage, is an asset for Bitcoin, because it connects two worlds. And someone wants to find a purpose, and this purpose needs to be found. It's proof of work to find your place in this new system.
Yeah.
And I confess, I'm still searching. Where is it? Where do you fit in? But we pivot. We try a little here, we try a little there. And somehow you see, there's traction. This is interesting. There is resonance. It does me good. It does the other person good. Something is happening. This incentivizes me to go further. And I think this is exactly those conversations that we need to have, but on an individual level. And people are scared. People live very schizophrenic lives in terms of what do they believe or have to believe as a function to make their ends meet, and what do they believe as a person. And I think we need to always constantly speak to the person and give them a rail that allows them to find their place, or at least the starting point in the new system, building on the experience, on the relationships, on the knowledge and what they have, because it will ultimately enrich the new system as well. And there's anyways Bitcoin that is immutable, that sort of sorts this thing all out and synchronizes all of the actions. And I think if you would have asked the same people 5 years ago, in 5 years, we will have ETFs, we will have institutional acceptance, we will have suits buying up our stack. It would have probably said, it's not going to happen, that's bullshit. And I think we're just, again, at the same frontier. We're discovering new interfaces between communities, and we're going to start the process again. And in 5 years, we're going to sit here and we will say, would we have ever thought that, you know, Bitcoin is now the instrument that really helps us to create prosperity and planetary health at the same time?
Anything on big money?
Yeah, so again, even the you can see how powerful the system is over you, even in the question, even though you're a Bitcoiner, because the natural thing is measure it in US dollars.
Yeah.
Right. And how many Bitcoiners measure their Bitcoin going up in US dollars when really US dollars are going down? Right. It boggles my mind. It absolutely boggles my mind, because those same people look at people in Argentina with crazy inflation rates and can't imagine that those people want their pieces of paper. Hmm. Why didn't they see it? And then they immediately don't do the same thing by measuring Bitcoin in their currency. Immediately. It's crazy, right? All prices in Bitcoin are falling forever, forever. It's the free market. All prices, if you measuring in your, converting to your US dollar or any other currency, it'll look like Bitcoin's going up forever, right? But the true measure is all prices are falling forever. And so now there's a whole bunch of people that eat ETFs that, because this is so powerful in their world, are going into ETFs because they think Bitcoin's going up in value.
Yeah.
And that becomes a gateway drug to first hold in an ETF where it's not really your Bitcoin and you're paying a fee to somebody to do that. Right. And
give me the money
so I can pay a fee. So I'm holding your Bitcoin. And if it all looked like that, it would be a centralized system, but it won't look like that. Right. If it all looked like that and they collected all the Bitcoin and then fractionalized it, it would look exactly like gold today and nothing would change. It won't look like that, because a whole bunch of those people that took step one will then go, oh, just a second, I'm going to be interested in this, and I'm going to start.
Yeah.
Why am I paying somebody to where I can hold it myself and be more safe, and it's mine. And then they start to understand, wait, the free market is deflationary, or prices keep falling, a little bit deeper and deeper and down. So it's just a giant funnel of more people starting to understand this.
Funnel got big.
And then that funnel expands, more people connecting. So
does Bitcoin use enough energy, Jeff, sorry.
So it will use way more energy, and that will be the best thing for our planet, right? Because it's creating abundant energy. That's the thing. So when you think about it, just think about a new peer-to-peer internet. That actually, I'm going to go back. I'll say that in a second. economics is super simple. People believe it's hard because it forces. Then other people are smart. And
you need a PhD.
You need a PhD, and I have to trust those people. And inflation is something that's required in economics. It's just theft. It's simple corruption. Now I understand that you can't have deflation from an inflationary credit-based system. I totally understand that. So people are conflating two different things to say we can't have deflation, and they're right. Deflation from a credit-based system resets everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a cascading spiral where you don't have anything less because there's no money. It's just credit, and credit collapses in that system. So they're right, but they're conflating that with all economics is probably two simple concepts. Prices follow the marginal costs of production, and we trade with each other all over the planet to get more value.
Amen.
That's it. It's that simple. It's really that simple, and we create, and that what that means is anything that gets stuck as prices fall and creates more margin opportunity, as we create abundance everywhere. And where would the entrepreneurs go? They would go to the things that are stuck. They would create the problems, and they would attack them in every different way to create unstuck and create more abundance. And so it cascades. It gets better and better and better. So our 5%, I just imply that today we would be living in a 5% deflation rate each year. Then it would be 10, then it'd be 15%. And the entire world, 8 billion people, would be getting richer at that rate. They are if they're in Bitcoin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. That's what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Does Bitcoin use enough energy?
I think Bitcoin is this brilliant system that self-corrects for always using the right amount of energy. So, and luckily enough, it has the potential to scale to the necessary consumption levels that allows us to generate and create energy abundance. And that's my big hope. What it's doing at this very point in time is completely irrelevant. It's completely irrelevant because nobody tells it which energy to use. By this beautiful thing of proof of work combined with difficulty adjustment and block reward. This is the innovation. This is it. Everything else is legacy.
Can I give you one more?
Sure.
Because there's somebody on Twitter, and I can't remember the name, but it came up a really great analogy, and using some of my work in Price of the Moral to come up with this analogy, and I just thought, wow, that's, I wish I came up with it. but they compared energy to a baker, right? And then a baker kind of at the end of the day throws out all the bread, and then if somebody came to them and said that's unused, if somebody came to them and said, I will buy all of your bread that's unused, forever. But I wanted it at a discount, right? Then the baker would, I'm going to create some more. I'm going to create more. And then, can you buy that too? Yes. As much as you can create. I'm going to power up everywhere. Can you buy that too? Yes. That's how it creates energy abundance.
And the beautiful thing is,
it creates energy abundance because the free market creates that energy abundance, and it sops up that energy everywhere, no matter where it is. And we have abundant energy on this planet. We just didn't have a pricing mechanism to get the abundant energy. And so now we do. It's so simple.
Yeah, electricity is not scarce.
Yeah.
Just in certain areas and times, you got to solve for that. Anything that I didn't cover, Harald, anything you want to add?
No, thank you.
Nothing?
Nope, cool. All good.
Guys, thank you very much. I hope you learned something new. Send some hashes my way. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Harald. A bit less mining content this time around, bit less petahashes, joules per terahash, and fleet discussions and what. Next Sunday, we'll speak mining again, I promise. I really hope, again, you learned something new. And with that, bye from all three of us, from Bitcoin Atlantis on Madeira, to everybody that's listening from the conference. I hope you had a good one. And yeah, see you around. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Thank you.
Thanks.